James McMahon, thanks so much for coming in. It's nice to talk to you again.
Happy to be here.
Let me ask you, if I could, just about the drought. You know, we've had this extreme drought here in Western North Carolina, many wildfires. I know anytime you ask a climate scientist about specific events, they will tell you we cannot attribute one specific event to climate change. But when you see this going on, do you have suspicion? Do you worry that this is a result of climate change? And where do you think we're headed here in Western North Carolina, especially?
Well, certainly the historic drought, and it is historic, coupled with some extra warmth leads to wildfires. And that was true in the West this summer as well. Drought plus heat equals wildfire eventually. Mm-hmm. And the climate projections in the future do call for both more heat and more drought in various different locations. So this is an example of the kinds of things that we'll see. And it's one of the very unfortunate impacts of changing climate.
It's very strange that we're so dry here in the West, and then on the East, they had just been doused by that hurricane, Matthew. And so we have the two extremes.
So when the atmosphere heats up, it tends to intensify the water cycle. So that means, tends to, in general, mean heavier precipitation. So perhaps the same amount, but in heavier doses. And so the dry places get drier and the wet places get wetter sometimes. And so intensifying the precipitation cycle can be worrisome because we have built our infrastructure around the climate that we've enjoyed for the past 50, 100 years. And it's already changed. You can see it clearly in the data. You can see it around you if you've been alive long enough.
Yeah. I know that a lot of our listeners who are concerned about the environment are thinking, what does Trump's election mean for the environmental movement? And you, as someone who's a CEO of the Collider, might have some great insight into that. So where do you think we're headed?
The problem that we're dealing with, the problem of climate change, is bigger than any given election cycle. The problem is bigger than any given election cycle. The solutions are bigger than any given election cycle. And they're bigger than any one country. Every year matters. Every country matters. However, it's far bigger than any of us.
Now, when I called you before, you were at the Marrakesh Climate Conference. How long were you there for?
I was there just for a few days, and I attended a sustainable innovation forum where business leaders from around the world came together to talk about how innovation can support solutions to climate change.
Okay. And what was the mood like at the climate conference in the wake of the election?
Well, people are understandably cautious and nervous, not only about the U.S. election, but also about events in Europe, for example, the Brexit, the British exit from the European Union. And so people are wondering what the impacts are going to be. At the same time, at the Sustainable Innovation Forum in particular, business leaders are very optimistic because there's an unstoppable business momentum behind the solutions behind climate change. The economics of clean energy have fundamentally tipped. It is becoming cheaper to create clean energy than dirty energy or old energy. Companies are also realizing that it's in the best interest of their balance sheet to use the best available science and data to understand what their climate risks are and what their climate opportunities are.
How important, then, do you think is the government policy aspect of it? Do you think business now is more important than, say, the laws set by any given government?
Unquestionably, yes. In an era where there might be decreasing government support, that only means that the private sector has to step up. So we're seeing a rapid trend toward market-driven solutions to climate challenges. You know, businesses and communities have real weather-related problems now and in the future. And, you know, wherever there's a problem, as there is, there's a profit to be made. And the bigger the problem, the bigger the profit. So entrepreneurs and capitalists are jumping in and trying to understand exactly what kinds of products and services they can create to both make a profit and also make meaningful change against climate challenges.
So a lot of people are thinking, you know, what if Trump pulls out of the Paris Climate Accord? 195 countries, I think, is the number of nations that are in there. And a lot of people are worried that if Trump pulls the United States out of that and is able to do that, then that may lead to some sort of cascade of other countries doing the same thing and that the whole deal could unravel. And, you know, you being at that conference, just anecdotally from people you heard or even just official statements, what do you think about that? Do you think the world would go on without the United States? And what kind of impact would the United States pullout have on that climate accord?
Well, the U.S. is unquestionably an important leader in the Paris agreements, as are several other nations. So we all hope that the U.S. abides by its agreements. At the same time, one of our members, a company called Climate Interactive, modeled what some of the impacts might be of various different scenarios, the U.S. Retracting in various different ways. The bottom line is, if we all globally stay on track with the commitments we've made, we stand a chance, there's a good chance of staying below the 2-degree warming limit that we're aiming for. If the United States was to pull out in some way, we would miss that. The estimates range from perhaps 2.3 to 2.7 degrees of additional warming, and that's clearly not where we want to be.
You know, the United States, as important a country as they are, you know, even with Obama's climate goals set by the Clean Power Plan, that we were already something like 2/3 of the way there. And so kind of, as you mentioned, the market trends and everything that we're doing in America kind of is already pushing us towards cleaner energy. Is the United States less important than other countries like China and India?
The U.S. is no longer the world's leading emissions country. That's China now. And we're no longer the world's leading, I'll call it, new energy superpower. So that's one of the strategic questions that we as a country in the U.S. have to ask ourselves. What role do we want to play in the energy system of the future?
Is there a silver lining to the election of Donald Trump to where now the collider's importance is taken on such an even greater significance? What does it mean for the collider itself?
Well, the Collider, as you know, is an innovation center focused on creating private sector solutions, business solutions to climate. So yes, in an era where the government is doing less, if that was to come to pass, the private sector absolutely needs to step up. And they are right now. Regardless of what happens with the election, with the government has a pivotal role to play and always will. However, the private sector is stepping into its own and providing the climate products and solutions that farmers need, that architects need, that builders need, that the energy sector needs to make good decisions, well-informed decisions about what are their climate risks and what do they need to do about it.
Does the Collider engage in any sort of policy advocacy? Like, do you attempt to sway government opinions, or do you just focus primarily on the business side and working with the private sector?
We focus on the business side. We are a non-advocacy, non-partisan nonprofit.
Oh, I see. Okay. And what have you heard in the weeks since the election internally, you know, with your staff and also with the businesses that you guys are working with?
We are busier than ever.
I can believe it.
There is so much to do. We feel inspired every day. And I think I speak for most of us when we say we can't possibly work hard enough.
What are some of the things that you're excited about that give you hope? I mean, talking about sort of like innovations, we know that solar power is getting cheaper, that there's promise in solar and there's some promise in wind, although there seems to be more opposition to wind because of the actual turbines themselves, and battery storage and things like that. What are the things that you think might actually, you know, solve this problem for us?
I think there are a lot of little things, a lot of innovations adding up is what's so very exciting to us. So, for example, we have one member, Brightfield Transportation Solutions, who has created a technology that allows you to plug in your electric vehicle into a solar panel, essentially, and then drive on clean energy, drive on sunshine. That kind of innovation is tremendously exciting.
You know, with NOAA also in town here. There's probably a lot of uncertainty over there, but Asheville will remain this kind of hub of climate change research, I assume. Is this sort of ground zero now for climate change research?
We love to call Asheville Climate City, just like we're also Beer City. And the reason is that we have a nexus here of public, private, nonprofit, and academic institutions. Some of the world's leading climate experts from all of those different sectors live in our town. You know, all of the nation's weather and climate data is stored downtown, and that has bred a huge cadre of climate experts. We all work together at the Collider to grow this new field of climate services, providing communities, providing businesses the information that they need to react intelligently to climate.
I know a lot of people who care about climate change are worried when they see things like the head of the EPA transition team being a climate denier in Trump's administration. He's also talked about bottoming out funding for NASA's climate research. How big a loss would that be? You're working with the private sector. Does that research, can that continue without government assistance? Is that critical to also fostering the business side of things?
Government research is obviously critical. And one of the most wonderful things I heard at the UN climate conference was, do you remember acid rain?
Yeah.
It was a huge problem back a few decades ago. And we hear less about it now. It's still a problem, but it's less of a problem now. And the reason is threefold. There was a public outcry, and then there was government regulation, and then there was business innovation. The same applies to climate change, and we need all three. So we need the public to be educated and educate themselves about what's going on and what the implications are. And we need government to continue to do the wonderful research that they're doing, as well as collecting the billions and billions of dollars worth of data that is required to understand this problem. And we need business innovation.
Are you optimistic personally about where we're going? Do you feel like that damage can be kept to a minimum?
Well, we've got a big challenge ahead of us.
Sure, yeah.
Of course. But we are redoubling our efforts. I haven't met anyone who works in climate who isn't energized, excited, and working harder than ever.
You guys have an event coming up. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
The Asheville Museum of Science, that is in the same building we are, in the Wells Fargo building on the first floor, is co-sponsoring with us a Beer City Science Pub. And that's where we get together and sample some beer and then hear a lecture, a science lecture. They're always so much fun, and everyone in the public is invited. The next one coming up is December 16th at 5:30 p.m., and it's on food and agriculture. And you can always find out more by going to thecollider.org.
You know, you talked about how everybody's redoubling their efforts. What would you say to people who are outside of the business who want to do their part as well? You have these events and things, ways that people can help out the Collider. So that's one way. What else could people be doing?
Yes, I'd say, first of all, come on down to the Collider because we have a lot of fun and there's a lot of educational experiences there. You can get into some of the really interesting science and meet the actual scientists. The other thing that we can all do is just stay educated. Look at some of the authoritative sources on climate, understand what the issues are and what we can do about it. Of course, the standard things always apply, saving energy and using less.
Okay, well, those are my questions, I think. James, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.